Okay. So again, this is work done in collaboration with Per Kraus and Nick Warner, and Nick Winston is creator. And I'll begin by giving some motivation and review. I'll then discuss the bigger physics behind the existence of future supertubes and black rings. I'll talk about the energy transitions in those objects and the possibility of obtaining black hole microscale geometries, and I'll discuss then the implications of this work for black hole physics. And there are many groups working on those issues having to do with black rings, supertubes, and so on and so forth. This is just a partial list. So let me begin by reviewing this object that is called the two-charged supertube, which is a very interesting object. If you take some fundamental strings, which are supposed to be green here, and you sprinkle some the zero brains on them, and you give this configuration some angular momentum, what's happening is that this configuration develops some dipole charge. It develops a dipole charge over D2 brain, and the D2 brain is extended along the fundamental string, and also is wrapping this closed curve in some transverse space. And this configuration has 8 supercharges, on one hand, which is, you should kill that thing. Okay, great. Maybe, let me go. Okay, so if you can. Okay, doesn't matter. Okay. Oh, wow, better. No. Yeah, it's working. I can just pull. Full screen. Ah, perfect. So, this configuration has a D2 brain dipole charge, and the D2 brain can again have a non-arbitrary shape. And interestingly enough, this configuration has 8 supersymmetries, which is quite amazing. And it has those supersymmetries regardless of the D2 brain, regardless of the shape of the D2 brain. And this shape can be any closed curve. So this is some object that has been studied and beaten up to death. It's basically known for about 5 years. And it has two charges. It has D0 charge and F1 charge, and it has the same supersymmetries as D0s and the F1s. You can go to different duality frames. You can just de-dualize it a few times and smear it a few times to get new supertubes. So you can get, for example, a D4 F1 into a D6 supertube or a D0 D4 into an F5 supertube. And if you dualize this guy, you get a configuration that has D1 and D5 as the component brains and Kalota Klein monopole as the dipole brain. And those configurations have been put in this particular duality frame, those configurations are smooth solutions which have no horizon. And they have been found to be dual to the microstates of the D1E5P system by those people. And if you count those configurations, if you count all these supertube configurations, if you count all the possible shapes, you do get the entropy of the D1E5 system, which is quite amazing because, again, you have a huge number of geometries, and if you just count all the geometries, you get the entropy of this system. Unfortunately, the D1D5 system is not a black hole, so what we'd like to do is to generalize that story, to generalize the success of this endeavor for the D1D5P system, which is a black hole, has a nice entropy, has three charges, and the big question which we want to answer is, can we construct three charge solutions which are dual to the microstates of the D1D5P system? Can we build those solutions? Can we build those configurations in string theory? If we can do that, then ABS-CST implies something very interesting for understanding of black hole physics. First of all, on the boundary, we have the ensemble of the states, and we have the individual states. The ensemble and this entropy are counted by the black hole in the bulk, and that is basically the same as some Jabafa duality. However, we are trying to show that each individual state has its own dual in the bulk. Each individual state corresponds to a geometry which has no horizon, and it's quite different from the black hole geometry. And if we can do that, and I mean, this is again the feature of the D1E5 system, and it might work also work in the D1E5P system. If we can do that, then ABS-CST forces us to accept this very strange understanding of black holes. Not the black hole would not be a fundamental object, but something like a statistical ensemble of those geometries. And if this is true, again, this would be quite a big jump. It would be like going from thermodynamics to statistical mechanics. And it will involve, it will help solving the information paradox, allow us to maybe derive holography and all these goodies. So this is again the big carrot in front of us. And to get to the big carrot, we actually need to construct three charge configurations. Now, those configurations, the easiest and the most naive way to construct them is to just take the zero brains and the one, take the supertube, and take also the supertube in different duality frames and just put them all up together. And one gets a configuration which seems to be, which has three charges, D0, F1, and D4, and three dipole charges. And we have been able to describe these configurations in the case of D2 and D6 dipole charge. And we have been able to give a Born-Infeld description for those supertubes. And what we found was that these D-brain configurations, again, have three charges, arbitrary shape. They're again given by some closed curve. And there's a huge number of them. They are given by basically 7 continuous functions of one parameter. A nice side effect of this work was the conjecture of the BPS black rings. When I conjectured them, there was a theorem that BPS black rings don't exist in five dimensions. I got some angry emails saying, you ignorant, don't you know black rings don't exist? There's a theorem, but then the theorem was actually proven to be wrong, and people found BPS black rings. But those are actually a very special case of those seven functions. They are only the U1 plus U1 invariant ones. And we would like to have solutions for a generic configuration. We'd like to have a solution for one of those generic configurations. And if you try to find a solution using normal supergravity techniques, boost rotate, boost rotate, boost rotate, some well-known solution, it doesn't work. You don't get to the right, you basically cannot make progress. So the key idea is to use the fact that the dipole charges do not affect the supersymmetries. And once you know that, you know that the Kinnick spinners are the same as the one of the brains which make the supertubes. And if you live close to USC, you can go there and you say, hey, I know the Kinnick spinners. And people who go to who are at USC know how to solve much better supergravity problems, and they can just attack this problem very easily. And this is what I have done. So Nick Warner and I proceeded on this road and said, let's use the Kinnick spinners. The easiest way to build a solution is to go to some duality frame where all the charges are democratic. All of them are treated on equal footing. So those are the, and basically this is some frame in which the charges are M2-brain charges on those planes. And the dipole charges are basically M5-brain charges wrapping some closed curve in some transverse space. And the metric is quite simple. The metric has some more factors. This blue guy corresponds to the blue brain. This green guy corresponds to the green brain, and so on and so forth. So it just has three work factors for each of the individual M2 brains, has some vector k, which gives you the angular momentum, and the only extra ingredients are basically those fields, which are basically the magnetic four forms forced by the M5 brains. You do have some M5 brains wrapping this closed curve. They couple this M series four form magnetically, and they source those guys. If you reduce them on the toroid, you actually get these forms, these two forms on the transverse four space, which are basically G1, G2, and G3. You also have the harmonic functions G1, G2, and G3. I guess Z1 and Z2 and Z6 here in Canada, and also the vector K. So that's our solution. And what we found by using the Kinnick spinners is that the solution has four layers. First of all, you have the base, which we took to be R4, but you can generally detect to be any hyperscale of four-dimensional space. And we'll get back to that. It's actually going to be quite an important feature of the rest of the talk. Then you have the dipole field strengths, which are basically those three fields, and they must be self-dual on the base. Supersymmetry implies they might be self-dual on the base. Then you have the work factors, G1, G2, and G3, and they satisfy this function, this equation. Everybody who is familiar with Klebanov-Strauss or Klebanov-Zeitlin, when they see this equation, they say, aha, this is nothing but some equation for a work factor which has charges dissolving fluxes. The supergravity fluxes basically enter on the right-hand side of the equation of the harmonic function. And the same thing is happening here. It's just that it's happening for all the three harmonic functions. And besides this equation, you also have the rotation vector, which is basically given by this equation. And probably you notice that the system is linear. If you solve it in this order, if you first find the G's, then use them on the right-hand side of this equation, then use the results on the right-hand side of this equation, the system is linear, and you can basically solve it quite easily. I must say the system was also found in five-dimensional supergravity work, but people didn't know it's linear, so it actually didn't bring not too much stuff was generated out of it. So basically, how to calculate the structural solutions corresponding to an arbitrary shape? Well, choose the M5-brain dipole profiles, choose any profile you want. Find the self-dual GIs. This is just electromagnetism in some R4 space. Sprinkle some M2-brains on the solution and find the harmonic function GI, and then solve the last equation and find K. It's basically as simple as doing electromagnetism in R4. Any brain shape you give me, any M2-brain distribution I have, I can just find a solution for that. And implicitly, again, I can write any solution. However, if you want to build explicit solutions, the one where you have the full metric in closed form, again, the U1 cross invariant case is easier to approach, and I'll get to that right now. So there is a solution just implies taking some M5 brains, you put them on some circle, you give them dipole charges N1, N2, and N3. Then you put some M2 brain charges, which I'm calling N1 bar, N2 bar, and N3 bar, for reasons which will be obvious later. And then we put some rotation in the plane of the ring, we make this thing rotate with some vector k, and then we basically get an object. And the object is actually a black ring, which has this nice entropy, and you don't need to remember it. And very interestingly, the charges that you put when you build this ring, the N1 bar, N2 bar, and so on and so forth, are not the same as the one measured at infinity. The charge measured at infinity is given by these N bars plus some combination of the dipole charges. And this is something which is again, which people know also from Klebanov-Strauss. If you go different places in the at this flow you measure different charges, and this is also happening. It's also happening here. Similarly, the angular momentum has a piece in the plane of the ring, which is basically this JP, and moreover has a piece coming from fluxes. And if you look at the near ring solution, if you just zoom in on the solution, you basically find that it's very similar to the 4D black hole or the 5D black strings. And the microscopic description of this ring is basically the 4D. It's basically the 4D black hole with charges N1 bar, N2 bar, N3 bar, N1, N2, N3, and JT. And those of you who know 4D black holes have probably figured out that this combination is nothing but the E77 quartic invariant of the 4D black hole as a function of those charges. And again, something which I find to be quite puzzling is the fact that the microscopic charges, the ones which enter in the microscopic description, are not the ones which are measured at infinity. And we have seen this again in other systems in string theory. So, however, what we want to do, again, we have the black ring, which is a nice Dibbern object, and which is a nice black hole, and we like it, and we can study it, and so on and so forth. However, we started trying to get microstates of the D15C system. We started trying to get geometries which have no horizon. That's, again, what we're looking for. So when S is bigger than 0, we have a nice, beautiful black ring, which we have people know and love. When S is equal to 0, then we have a candidate for a microstate. We have a geometry which has no horizon. And when S is less than 0, the solution has closed hand curves, and it's unphysical. Now, the near horizon geometry is basically ADS3 cross S2 cross C6, and it's quite easy to see that. And the curvature is quite low. The curvature actually can be made quite low by taking a large enough number of dipole brains. However, the naive microstate solution, the one which has S equals to 0 and which you like to get for the microstate, is singular. And the reason for that is that you have some ADS space, and this S1 shrinks to 0 size. I mean, it's basically like putting if you put ADS 5 in a box, you have some S1 shrinks to 0 size, and it causes some singularity in the solution. So this is basically the one problem. And so basically the naive solution, which you just take by putting some Dibbern in some space, is not the one which is used as a microstate. However, we have two ways to solve this singularity. We can solve it using geometric transitions, or you can solve it by remembering again that the near ring geometry is nothing but the 4D black hole. So we can relate this singularity resolution to the one of the zero entropy 4D black hole. And we can actually do both and find the same answer. So what's a geometric transition? I think everybody knows, has seen those things quite a bit. Take some brains, put them on some cycles, they rub this cycle, there's a dual cycle, and if you integrate some flux from this dual cycle, you get a brain charge. And once you turn on gravity, the brains shrink the cycle they sit on. The brains shrink this blue cycle, so the blue cycle becomes zero size, and the dual cycle, this red cycle, becomes large. And there's a new solution which has different topology and no brain sources. And this is something which we have seen over and over and over in string theory. And in the case of the M5 brains, it's actually quite easy to implement this geometric transition picture. We have a dual cycle. The M5 brains have some F1 in this R4 base. We have a dual cycle in S2, and if you integrate this flux on S2, you get the corresponding dipole charges. And once you turn on geometry, once you look at the full solution, the S1 is actually shrunk to zero size by the SI brains, and this blue and this red S2 becomes large. Now, so again, the S2 is large, the S1 goes to zero size. However, the S1 goes to zero size both at the location of the brains and at the origin of the coordinates. Again, this is a ring sits in a two-plane, and at the origin of the two-plane, this S1 also goes to zero size. So I have an S1 that shrinks to zero size both here and here, and you have a segment on which it's fiber and it's big. So this actually implies that there's a topologically non-trivial S2 coming from this geometric transition. So we expect to have a new base which has a non-trivial S2, the red S2, which is again the measure of the M5 brain dipole flux, and the green S2, which basically came from this S1 shrinking to zero size into position. Can we find this base? Can we find what comes? Is it enough information to find the resulting solution, to find the resolved solution? The only thing we should know about the base is that it's hyperkähler. And if I give you some supertube which has a weird shape, this is not enough. You cannot use that information to find a new base. However, if the supertube is U1 cross U1 invariant, there's a theorem by Gibbons and Rubach which says that hyperkähler plus U1 cross U1 invariant in four dimensions implies that the manifold is Gibbons-Hawking. What is Gibbons-Hawking? A four-dimensional Gibbons-Hawking manifold is a manifold which has this metric. There's a three-dimensional base. There's a work factor V and V inverse. A and V satisfy this equation. If V is equal to 1 over R, this is just R4 written in some funny coordinates, and that is something quite familiar. If V is equal to 1 plus 1 over R, then this is Tobnot space. And the fact that we have two non-trivial S2s implies that V has three centers. Again, when you have 17 centers, you have 16 non-trivial two spheres on these Gibbons-Hawking spaces. And the fact that the metric is asymptotically R4 implies that the sum of the charges is equal to 1, because V is equal to V sub dot like 1 over R at infinity. And the charges also must be integers for smoothness. So what we find is that the new harmonic function, the new base manifold, must be a Gibbs Hawking base with this harmonic function, with this V. 1 over R minus Q over R A plus Q over R B, where Q is an integer. So that's the result of our, again, just using general arguments about dramatic transitions and the Young cross line invariants. And so we have basically the naive solution, which has a ring sitting in some plane. And then we have the resolved solution, in which this ring position has bubbled. Basically, the solution is bubbled. We have a bubble of going between A and B. One is a plus charge, one is a minus Gibbs Hawking charge. And moreover, we have a new cycle. We have the green cycle, which has flown between the origin and this plane. So that's again confirming our expectation. If you integrate this flux from here, you get the dipole brains. So again, the integral of the flux on this cycle AB encodes the dipole charges. You have another integral of the flux on this other cycle, which is basically which I'm calling here, which I'm denoting by F. And the M2 brain charge comes entirely from the supergravity fluxes. The M2 brain charge comes from the product of the flux on this cycle and the flux of this cycle measured at infinity. So all the information about the M2 brain charge now sits in the product of those two cycles. If you go away from the AB bubble, or if you have a small AB bubble, the solution just resembles the naive solution. You have no idea you had a dramatic transition. This is, again, a local phenomenon. However, as you go close to the AB bubble, you basically start seeing the bubbling. You see that basically you have a new topology and you have a different solution. And this is, again, something people who know LLM have probably seen. This is very similar to LLM, except that you have there you have four spheres in R8. Here we have two spheres in R4. That's otherwise the physics is basically the same. So this is basically the result of the dramatic transitions analysis. We basically found that the singularity of the S equals zero black ring, or of the supercube, by using the names interchangeably, are resolved by the nucleation of a plus minus Gibbs Hawking pair. This is actually what came just using dramatic transitions and nothing else. Now, we can also relate the singularity to the 4D black hole, and the way to do that is to basically put the black ring in top knot. If you put the black ring in top knot, near the origin of top knot, the space looks like R4, so this is just the black ring in top knot. However, if you change the modulo, you can have the black ring slide away, and it slides into the asymptotic region where the metric is R3 cross S1. And in this region, the ring is nothing but the 4D black hole. And the nucleation of a Gibbs Hawking plus minus pair implies that the ring is resolved by, again, the nucleation into two regions. But from a 4D black hole perspective, those two regions are basically two different stacks of brains. So the 4D black hole, the zero entropy 4D black hole, is resolved by the nucleation into basically two different stacks of brains. And this is something which looks quite strange. However, we can also analyze the D95 KKM P system, which is a 4D black hole, and you can look at the S equal to zero solution, which has, again, P going to zero. And if you do a CFT analysis of this system, which Perkaus and I have done, you also find that the S equals zero 4D black hole, which is, again, the D95 KKM system, is resolved by the splitting of the D95 from the KKM. So we basically found the same resolution mechanism coming from two very different sources. One of them was just geometric transitions. The other one was looking at the CFT of the D95 KKM system, and we found the same resolution mechanism. Now, there's something very interesting about this new base. So the new base has a Gibbs Hawking, is a Gibbs Hawking metric, which has this harmonic function. And you see, there's a negative term here. So this function V becomes negative in some region. And this implies that the full metric, the full four-dimensional metric, changes sign as you go from here to here. Here is plus, 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 plus. Here is minus, 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 minus. And this is something quite weird. Normally, you throw away such manifold. Normally, if you see such a manifold, you just say, oh, this is garbage. I mean, why do I care about metrics with negative signature? However, the harmonic function Zi, which works this base, also blow up and change sign at the interface. And the reason is the following. The harmonic function satisfies this equation. You have GUSG, and you have this equation. And this star knows about the base. This star knows that the base is changing sign from plus, 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 plus to minus, 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 minus. And the equations, if you actually solve these equations, you find that the functions Zi go like 1 over V times something. And the full metric is actually smooth. And this is quite remarkable. Again, it started from this very weird manifold which has negative signature, and we basically found the full solution which is smooth. So it looks like those manifolds are something which you need to think about. You need to consider if we want to basically find the microstates of the D95 system. So this is basically what we found for one supercube. Now let's take n of them. Let's just take n concentric supertubes, and if you look at the naive solution, they just sit in a plane around the origin. However, if you look at the resolved solution, they are resolved by the nucleation of plus minus centers. Each supertube is resolved by the nucleation of a given Hawking plus minus center. And you can also take a more generic solution, which basically has the centers sprinkled on the base in some distribution. There's a flux running again between each of those points. There's a two cycle, and there's a flux running on those two cycles. Normally, those cycles would attract each other, and those points would collapse. But you could need to have some flux in order to keep these things apart. And we have basically been able to find smooth solutions that have a given Hawking base and an arbitrary distribution of those centers. This is something which has been done about 2 months ago. And again, all those manifolds are smooth and happy. Now, there's another way to obtain C-sharp microstates, and this is basically by the work of Giustomatur and Saxena. They have actually taken the five-dimensional non-extremal black hole, and they took some extremal limit in some very novel way, and they found a geometry, which is again a five-dimensional, a microstate of the D95 system, which has again a given Hawking base, which actually has all the plus centers clumped together and all the minus centers clumped together, and this is a new harmonic function. So people have also found this kind of basis by starting from the non-extremal five-dimensional black hole. And I think it's a very interesting convergence. We basically are converging on the same conclusion. We have these kind of spaces which have negative signature, regions of plus, 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 and regions of minus, 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 minus. And they come to us from three different sources. They come to us from geometric transitions, they come to us from the S equals zero black hole, and they come from us from the extremal limits of the five-dimensional black hole. And I think this is a very non-trivial agreement. This is something which we should take very seriously. Now, this is again what we have concretely built. From the different description of supertubes, however, we know that supertubes can have basically arbitrary shapes and arbitrary charge distributions, and the S equals zero configurations are given by six functions. One of them, you have four shapes, you have three N2 densities, and entropy gives you one constraint. And from the geometric transition of an arbitrarily shaped supertube, one expects to get a given hyperkähler manifold again from supersymmetry, which is asymptotically R4, and one expects to get six functions worth of those hyperkähler geometries. Now, nobody unfortunately has classified those geometries, and there's not so much known about them because they have negative signature, but I think this is again what comes from the D-brain construction. We have the D-brain objects, and we believe geometric transitions are quite generic, so those things should come on us. And if you take n supertubes, which are concentric, then geometric transitions give you six n functions of asymptotically are four hyperkähler geometries, which again has patches of minus, 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 minus signature. And this is a huge number. This is a huge number of D95 of geometries, and they all give you microstates of the D95 system. So we have on one hand the D95 system on the boundary, and in the bulk we have been able to construct a huge number of solutions given again by, I believe they are going to be given by 6N functions, and they all have D95, they all have D95 P asymptotics. And if Matur is right, those might as well be enough to account for the entropy of this system. And I think it's a very important problem to actually understand those manifolds, classify them and study them and count them. And they're actually quite funny because the regions of negative signature can actually clump quite a lot, because when you have negative signature and a positive signature, the total length is zero. So in zero space, you can actually clump quite a lot of such space. So in the conclusion, I would like to discuss three possibilities which we have for the physics of the D95 P system, and what are the ways to understand this D95 P system, and what's the way to understand the black holes in this system. One point of view, again, I will not take votes on that like yesterday. One point of view is that the D95 P states on the boundary, which are dual to the entropy, which count the entropy of the black hole, do not have individual bulk duals. And ABCFT only relates partition functions, and there's no reason to expect to have one state to one state or one vacuum to one vacuum. However, I have just showed you that there's a huge number of D95 P states which do have bulk duals. They are just giving you 6N functions worth of hyperkähler manifolds, which are all bulk duals of some state of the D95 P system. Maybe you say those are not going to be generic. There's quite a huge number of them, and I think it would be quite hard to argue that they are non-generic. Moreover, it's quite an unnatural distinction. Why, within the same ABS-CST, within the same system, with the same charges, some of the states are just have individual duals, one-to-one, one-to-one, and some others are just clumped together in one big black hole. It's a very unnatural distinction, and I think it's something which we have to think about. Moreover, all the other systems which have many vacua, which we understand LLM, Django, Viton, Zioni, five, Kocinski cluster, different S5. All of them have one bulk dual, have one bulk state for each boundary state, or one bulk vacuum for each one for each boundary vacuum. There's a one-to-one correspondence in all of them. And it would be quite funny that, I mean, so all the systems which we know do have this one-to-one correspondence, and it's quite, it would be quite strange if the system which happen to have a black hole don't have this correspondence. The second possibility is that each boundary state does have a bulk dual. However, the generic bulk microstate is very similar to the black hole. It's just a black hole with some Planck size mess around either the singularity or at the horizon. The problem with this proposal is that each microstate, again, I haven't read the things that I have, which I have, which are objections. Each microstate has horizon, and therefore you might say has an entropy. And moreover, the physics of each microstate is not unitary for the same reason as the information paradox. I mean, if you throw something in, it doesn't come out. So those are the problems of the second proposal. The third one is that each boundary state has a bulk dual, but the bulk dual has no horizon, as basically unitary physics, and is large. And this is basically what Mathur has been proposing. One problem with this proposal is that it is hard to obtain using collapsing shells. If you just say collapsing shells of dust, it looks like you get the sparse solution and not any one of those geometries. However, there's a very non-trivial check. What I said here, each state is large, horizon size, is very non-trivial. Normally, if you increase gravity, the horizon increases. If I increase gravity, every object in this room is going to shrink. So it's quite unnatural for something to actually have horizon size and actually keep on growing with this shrink as the horizon grows. However, you can actually look at those microstates, and you can actually find that they actually grow with this shrink exactly like the black hole horizon. So this is something which could have killed this point, and it doesn't. It's something which it just goes. So I think it's a very important question to address which of those versions of black hole physics is correct. So to summarize, I have given the deliberate physics behind the existence of black rings and supertubes. I have given the supergravity solutions on how to build them for arbitrary shapes. I have showed you the geometric transitions implied that the microstate of the D5C system correspond to some asymptotical R4 hyperscalar geometries with patches of minus, minus, minus signature, and the six and functions of those geometries. I believe that, again, the deep brain physics is telling us there are six and functions of those geometries, huge number of them. And I think it's very important to first classify those spaces, understand them, find how many there are, count them, use some mathematicians to do the grunt work for us, and so that you can take all the credit. The second question, which I think is important, is to find the CST microstates, which are dual to the bubbling solutions. We have a huge number of bubbling solutions. We don't know what exactly they correspond on the boundary. And the question is, what are the features of a generic microstate? Can we have a generic microstate? What's the state which is dual to the longest effective string, for example, on the boundary? Can we find those features? Can we map them from the geometry? And I think there's another point which I forgot to write. There are some connections with the topological string theory and the Gurusamy-Dravaka proposal, which also this work is, so I mean, I think those fields are going to converge in the near future, so it might be that there will be some common ground there. And again, I think what I want to leave it to you is which of those three versions of black hole physics is correct. Thank you.
Questions? Martin?
At least for some cases, these tub nut like metrics with some wrong sign mass points have fully non singular resolutions, analogs of the moduli spaces of three dimensional Yang Mills, supersymmetric Yang Mills theories with a certain number of hypermultiplets. Do they play any role? Do they have any significance?
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to know anything. I mean, I couldn't find any information. I haven't looked so much because we just got this thing out about a month ago. But I'd like to know as much as possible about those things with negative signature. And if they have any...
They don't have negative signature. These are complete metrics, positive definite metrics, which have the same asymptotic behavior.
I see. If they have non-trivial cycles, then I believe they play a role. That's my understanding. If they don't have non-trivial cycles, then we should probably just put some difference on them, look at the geometric transition, and they might give you some new spaces from... So again, starting from some manifold, if you put some range, you actually generate some cycles via geometric transition. So it might be that generalizations of those things will play a role. But I haven't thought about them too much.
Andy? Or
I have a comment and a question.
Mm-hmm.
The first comment is I don't see how one can ever hope to identify classical solutions with black hole microstates, because black hole microstates are discrete, whereas classical solutions come in continuous families. And it might make more sense to talk about doing quantum mechanics on this moduli space of solution, and then identifying some kind of cohomology of the moduli space with a black hole microstate. Mm-hmm.
It might not mean that U on the 5 system, we also have arbitrary shapes, and one is able to quantize those arbitrary shapes. There's some work on quantizing those states. There's some work by John Models and Belchick-Palmer, and also some other work, and you can actually quantize the shapes. I mean, you're going to have arbitrary shapes. You have a two-charge supertube which has arbitrary shapes. You can quantize those shapes, and you can actually get the entropy of the U on the 5 system, for this quantization. So it actually might be possible to count those things. Even if classically you have continuous shapes, you want to quantize them, you might have some discrete spacing, and I think there'll be talk tomorrow about attempts to do that. And but indeed, then it might be possible that work on the moduli space might yield more information. It's again something which we are barely beginning to have the objects to count. Before this work, we didn't know what to count. Now we know we have to count those objects. We have to look on the moduli space of this weird hyperscale manifold that have negative signature. So I think that's